So what we're going to do, to give you kind of a general idea of what's coming, tonight I'm going to be talking about creation. We're going to be talking about things to build up your faith, sort of our roots. Tonight I'm going to be talking about that. Next week, our very own Jim Dew is going to cover the subject, why I left atheism, okay, which I think is going to be fascinating for us. It's going to build our faith, and it's going to help us help other people and build up our own faith. So Jim's going to do that. The first two of these next four classes, this is sort of a series of four. The third and the fourth class are going to be more of a history of the church. So Jim is going to teach the first of those on the Reformation, kind of giving us sort of where do we come from. And then I'm going to do the last one, which is going to be on the Restoration Movement, which came out of the Reformation in the United States back in the late 1700s, early 1800s. So that's what's coming. Now, having described it like that, let me correct myself. Next week is our traditional week to split up the men and the women. So we'll have a men's class back in the back, a women's class in here. So Jim's first class will be 2 weeks from today. And then he will do 3 weeks from today. And then I will do my last one 4 weeks from today. So it's time to start with what we're going to do today. Okay? We're going to be talking about creation. And, you know, they're going to be doing some great stuff back in the back about teens, but this is not chopped liver. Okay? We're talking about creation. And, oh, there's an on-off switch. Okay. Okay. So basically, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's the first sentence in the Bible. And that's the most profound sentence ever written, ever stated. God created the heavens and the earth. So, like I said, this is not chopped liver. We're talking about the most profound thing ever said. Okay, God created the heavens and the earth. It's the ultimate answer to every question. You know, it's life, the universe, and everything, right? Everybody knows where that came from? A few of you know where that came from. Okay, Hitchhikers of the Galaxy. Yeah. So anyway, basically, God created an incredible universe. He spoke and it became. And we're going to talk about that. And I'm going to start out, just because I think this is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, I'm going to start out talking about Yosemite, which God made, right? And you know, you cannot get the sense of scale in a picture. If you've ever been there, everything, you feel so small, everything's enormous. If you see, there are people down there at the bottom, on the bottom right. But you go into Yosemite, you're walking up to these huge granite cliffs, these huge waterfalls, and, you know, sequoia trees that, you know, are, you've never seen a tree like that before. You know, just massive things. You feel really small in Yosemite. And you think about what a great God made something like that. Okay? But we're not done. God made the whole world, right? And the world is pretty big. It's about 24,000 miles around at the equator, okay? And that means if you're standing on the equator, it goes all the way around once in 24 hours, right? So that means you're going about 1,000 miles an hour standing still on the equator. Here in Atlanta area, we're probably, I don't know, 700 miles an hour. So you didn't know you were moving that fast, did you? Okay, but the world's pretty big. You know, we're looking here at, this is a Apollo picture of Africa, actually. You can see sort of the Horn of Africa up there, and you can see the South Africa at the bottom. I have a laser, right? So there you go. That would be South Africa down there. So anyway, you know, Richard was down there somewhere when that picture was taken. Anybody see him? Can anybody see him? You know, I don't know. I don't know my geography that well, but he was in there somewhere. But, you know, pretty small, right? You know, you can't see him. You know, you think about how small you would be on that globe in this picture. You know, God created an enormous, the world is huge, and we're very small. You know, God spoke and it became, okay? Amazing world. But we're not done, okay? Here we have the sun, okay? Now, if you thought the earth was big, the sun is bigger, Okay, it's also very scary, very hot, very, you know, it's basically a hydrogen bomb going off all the time, a huge, bigger than you can imagine. It's as wide across as 100 Earths, as tall and as deep, and you do all the math there, you could fit a million Earths inside the sun. So you think about that. God spoke, and it became. Okay, the sun is incredibly hot, incredibly big. It's been going on, it's been burning, if you want to call it burning. It's been producing energy from hydrogen for eons and eons. Okay, it's just an incredible thing. It's 93 million miles from us, roughly, depending on the season of the year. It takes light 8.5 minutes to get here from the sun. Okay, that's how fast does light move? Really, really fast. It moves at the speed of light, right? Okay. It takes 8.5 minutes to get here from the sun. So you think about it, you're riding on this light beam, moving at the speed of light for 8.5 minutes to get here. That is a long, long way. 93 million miles is a long way. So from here to the sun is pretty big. But we're not done yet. Whoops. We won't be done after this slide either, as you can see. This is an artist's conception because we've never really sent a satellite out here that could take this picture. What you're looking at, this orb here, is called Sedna. And there has been some debate about whether they ought to call that a planet or not. I think they finally decided it's not a planet. But it's out beyond Pluto, out beyond Neptune, depending on which one you consider is the last one out there. But you see this little bright dot right there? That's the sun. The sun big enough to hold a million Earths. Wow. Okay. And so we're that far away from it. And this is the edge of the solar system. So here we're talking about, you know, and now the Earth is, I don't know, one of these tiny dots, you know, out here. Maybe that one. I don't know. But it's, this is an artist's conception. But we're a long, long way from Earth here, a long, long way from the sun. And God made that thing too. He spoke and it became. Okay. Now, here we have a picture of our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, as seen from the COBE satellite. We'll be talking a little bit more about the COBE satellite later. But basically, they sent this satellite up trying to do some scientific research in outer space. And at one point, they turned it and pointed it towards the center of the Milky Way. Earth is actually kind of on the edge of the Milky Way. So if we look in one direction, we see all the stars of the Milky Way galaxy. We look in the other direction, and we're kind of looking out at the rest of the, you know, whatever's next out there. Okay, so this is looking back towards the Milky Way galaxy, kind of giving you an idea of what it looks like. And scientists tell us there is an estimated 200 to 400 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy. Okay, now think about that. The sun is an average star, maybe even on the small size. It's not a big star. Okay, so you think, okay, let's just say it's average. 200 to 400 billion stars, each one of them able to hold a million Earths. And the Milky Way galaxy is at least 70,000 light years across. So remember, it takes 8.5 minutes for light to get from the sun to the Earth. It takes 70,000 years for light to get from there to there. Okay. Milky Way galaxy is huge. Just think about that. You know, if a light beam started out on one side of the Milky Way, you know, at the beginning of the Bible, biblical time, it would not have even gotten that far by now. It would still be flying along at the speed of light, and it still wouldn't have gotten to the other side. Okay, that is a big thing. The Milky Way galaxy is huge. Okay. Okay. Here we have what they call the spiral galaxy. It's supposedly a twin of the Milky Way, but the good thing about showing this is you can kind of see it from the top view instead of from the side view. So it's got that very bright center, and then it's got the spiral going around it, right? So that's the spiral galaxy. That's something we can see that one looking out of the Milky Way galaxy. We can see that one. Somebody took a picture of it. Okay, probably the Hubble Space Telescope. Now, here we have an interesting picture. This picture was taken by the Hubble Space Telescope. And you see all these stars? They're not stars. Those are galaxies. The picture you are looking at shows 10,000 galaxies. 10,000 galaxies in that picture. Now, how big of a spot in the sky is that? I used this slide in an Old Testament survey class I did a few years ago. And I passed around a box of Cheerios. Said, everybody take one Cheerio. That's your Hubble telescope. Hold it out at arm's length and look through the hole. That's what you're looking at. That's how big of a spot in the sky you're looking at. 10,000 galaxies in that spot. Now, how many galaxies do you think there are in all of the spots? God spoke and it became. Isn't that incredible? You know, God created all of that. Now, there's something really interesting about this. What they did is they pointed at a spot in the sky where there weren't a lot of near stars. They tried to find a black spot, you know, a spot where there's nothing bright so they can see how far they can see. And so this was looking at that spot they chose. Let me just go back to here. Estimated 100 to 300 billion galaxies. Galaxies have 200 to 400 billion stars. Stars can hold a million Earths. Do the math. We're in a really big place. Okay, God spoke and it became. How big is God? Okay. All right. Now, again, think about how hot the sun is, how much energy comes out of it, how long it's been burning. Look at all of these guys. Okay. Every one of those galaxies has billions of stars just like that. All right. Hundreds of billions of stars in each. Okay? Now, here we have, just kind of pointing out a little bit more about what you're looking at in that previous picture. You see these little green circles, and inside them the red dots? Those are the farthest away galaxies. Now, at the risk of dazzling you or confusing you or saying things that don't make any sense to anybody, I'm going to try to explain this. You ever hear a train coming and you hear the horn and it's a high pitch, and as it goes by you, it becomes a lower pitch? Something that's moving away from you has a lower pitch, doesn't it? A car horn. It'll be, you know, come higher pitch when it's coming towards you, lower. That's called the Doppler effect. The same effect happens with light as with sound. So as objects are moving away from you at high speed, the color, which is the frequency of the light, the color changes. The red here are the farthest away. They can calculate from that Doppler effect, from the amount of it, they can calculate how far away they think those galaxies are. And they're saying they're 13 billion light years away. That means that the light that the Hubble spaceship was taking in when it made these pictures left those galaxies 13 billion years ago. That's a long time. So God spoke and it became. All right? So, okay, we can have lights. But basically, creation, this exercise is basically to show you how amazing God is. Creation displays the amazing power of God. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. God's eternal power. Okay, I think we've gotten a glimpse of that. God who created everything we just described. Okay? So there's another passage from the Old Testament, Psalms 19, 1-3. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour out speech. Night after night, they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Anybody looking at all of that has to be amazed at it. Where did this come from? Why is this here? You know, the most amazing thing that you can confront in your life is to look at the creation and say, why is there anything? Why does anything exist? Why is there here? Why is it here? Why am I here? Okay. So the Bible tells us, people ought to be able to look at creation and know that there's a God. Okay? Now, people have always asked these questions, you know, where did I come from? Where did everything else come from? Where did all this stuff come from? What does it mean? Again, these are the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. These are the questions of life, the universe, and everything. Okay? Why is this here? And people have asked those since really early times of man. So basically, where did this stuff come from? The currently dominant scientific explanation is called the Big Bang Theory. How many of y'all have heard of the Big Bang Theory? Most all of you, right? Okay. And basically the idea there is everything began at a single point. It's called the singularity. And basically the universe exploded on the scene, okay, from there. You know, when we talk about the galaxies that are farthest away being moving fastest, they're moving the fastest, it's accelerating. The universe is expanding and accelerating. It's what the scientists tell us, okay? So it all started from a point. And you can calculate how long ago that point was from the acceleration and the distance that it's traveled. So that's some of the ways they come up with these dimensions, because, you know, nobody can actually travel out there to these places and measure it. These are all theories, right? It's what scientists think. But using the best information and the smartest minds they can to analyze it. But that's what they think. All right? So basically the Big Bang Theory is a consequence, you know, basically of Einstein's general theory of relativity, you know, back in the early 1900s. The idea of the universe exploding on the scene, the estimated age of it, and that it's expanding at an accelerated pace. It all falls out of the math, basically, from the general theory of relativity. There's some pretty strong evidence, that scientific evidence, that the theory is correct. Back in 1948, there was a prediction that there must be background radiation. They couldn't account for all the mass in the universe and all the energy in the universe. And they said, you know, there's some extra stuff out there that we haven't detected yet. And they said it's background radiation based on Einstein's general theory of relativity. That was just basically people analyzing formulas and theories. In 1965, some AT&T scientists confirmed it and measured it. Okay, they won a Nobel Prize in 1978 for that work. Okay, it was further confirmed in 1992 by the COBE satellite. Remember, I told you we were going to come back to that. They sent a satellite up in 1992 with the express purpose of measuring that background radiation, and they were able to measure it, and found what the prediction had said would be there. Scientists consider this a really strong proof of the Big Bang Theory. Although a few skeptics remain. We'll talk about what's the motivation behind those skeptics in a minute. Basically, the Big Bang Theory made scientists really uncomfortable when they first started talking about it. They didn't like the Big Bang Theory because it means there was a beginning. Okay? The prevailing idea was, everything has always been. It's just always been there. But the Big Bang Theory says, no, that's not true. And in fact, there's some other things we'll look at in a minute that say that's not true. But basically, if there was a beginning, what caused it? Why did it come about? What caused the beginning? The creation really has, the fact that you have a beginning, it has religious implications. Okay? And people didn't like that. Okay? For example, Sir Arthur Eddington, he was a famous British astrophysicist. He experimentally confirmed Einstein's general theory of relativity, a pretty high-profile, big-shot scientist. But he struggled with the idea of in the beginning. Here's a quote. Philosophically, the notion of a beginning to the present order is repugnant to me, and I should like to find a genuine loophole. He didn't like that, and incidentally, he never found his loophole. You know, scientists now basically accept that there was a beginning. You know, they have to deal with that. Okay? He also said, we must allow evolution an infinite amount of time to get started. So this was part of his problem. If he was going to believe that evolution started without any intelligent design or anything causing it, any creator, then it had to have a huge amount of time for that to happen. And he said that if we accept that there's a beginning, then we got a problem with the way we've been teaching or the way we've been theorizing evolution. Okay? Now, I'm not here to try to create in your mind the idea that there was no evolution. What I'm trying to say is it didn't happen randomly over a long period of time. Whatever happened, happened because there was a beginning and someone started it. There's too much order and too much organization in it to have happened in a finite amount of time, as a very prominent scientist complained. Okay, so Big Bang in the Bible. So was it 6 days? Was Earth created in 6 days, as Genesis says? Or was it 13.7 billion years? You know, an interesting question. It's a controversial question. All right. There's a New Earth view that basically says there's a literal Bible timeline that's around 6,000 years, and that creation merely has the appearance of being older than 6,000 years. Okay? So hold that in your thought. There's an Old Earth view that says the six phases of creation were not literal 24-hour days. The universe could be billions of years old, and observations tend to make us think that it is. So that's the Old Earth view. So is it a New Earth or is it an Old Earth? Some of you are wondering why I brought this stick. Is if the person next to you is asleep right now, let me know. All right. I was going to bring a yardstick, but you know, we don't have one anymore. I don't know how that happened. But so I brought this stick. Okay? Use your imagination, because what this stick is time. Okay? Think about this stick as time. It has a beginning, has an end. Okay. Even as early as Augustine, back in, was it 400, something like that, in the 400s A.D., Augustine recognized, reading the scripture, that God created time. Time was part of what God created. Albert Einstein pretty much proved that. You know, the general theory of relativity. Time and energy and matter are all tightly interrelated in all those formulas. It was all created together. So basically, God created time. So here's a question for you. If God, this is time and God is creating it, when did God create it? Where on that line was God when he created it? It's kind of a nonsense question, isn't it? He wasn't standing in time when he created it. He was standing outside of time and he created time. Okay? So God is not constrained to move through time like you and I are. You know, that's why God can see the future. He's been there. You know, it's kind of like you and I can walk up to this stick and point to any spot on it, whether it's 13.7 billion years ago, whether it's however far in the future this is to the end of time. Okay? God can reach up there and he can look at it and he can see what's happening at any point in time. Okay? God created time. So, you know, was he creating it? Maybe he was holding it 6,000 years ago. Maybe that's where he, you know, maybe that was the origin. So he's saying, okay, that was time zero. Okay. Now, maybe that's what it is. That's sort of in my mind what makes the most sense out of the scriptures and the science. Okay. If that doesn't help you, then don't worry about it. But if that helps you, then great. You know. But the idea here is that whether it's a new earth or an old earth, or how you reconcile Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 with Albert Einstein and all these other people, you know, maybe we misunderstand the scriptures. Maybe we read it and we say we're putting more into it than he said. Maybe science is misinterpreting the evidence. They hadn't been out there to those red galaxies and measured it. They don't have a tape measure that long. You know, they can't get there from here. So they're looking at the evidence they can see, and that's what they come up with. All right? So maybe they are misinterpreting the evidence. But scripture and science will agree perfectly when they're properly understood. When and if. You know, one of these days, you know, I plan to be in, you know, heaven and ask God about this, and I'm sure, you know, there's probably still parts of it I'll never understand. But, you know, maybe I can get a little more explanation. But the bottom line of it is this is a disputable issue. I don't really care whether you prefer to think of the earth as 6,000 years old or 13.7 billion years old. What I do care about is whether or not you believe that God told the truth. Okay, because God did tell the truth. Okay, when he wrote the scriptures. And he told us what we needed to know, and that's all. You know, the amazing thing is that the Bible got this right. It says there was a beginning. Other religions didn't do that well. Okay, we're going to look at a little bit of that. But, you know, is it new or old? Deuteronomy 29:29, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law. And Romans 14:1, accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. I categorize this one as a disputable matter. So it's okay. Y'all believe whatever works for you. Okay. Now, aside from the Big Bang theory, what other theories have scientists, tried to hang their hat on? One of them is what they call steady state theory. Basically, the universe has always existed. There was no beginning. And most scientists don't buy this anymore. They used to, as we saw from some of those earlier quotes. There's other scientific problems with accepting steady state. Have you ever heard of the three laws of thermodynamics? Anybody in here heard that? Some of you guys? Okay. This is sort of the poor man's explanation of the three laws of thermodynamics. First one is, you can't get something for nothing. Second one is, you can't even break even. And the third one is, you can't get out of the game. Okay. So we're going to look at a couple of those in a little more detail. So that's, you can't get something for nothing. Basically, you can't create matter out of nothing. You can't create energy out of nothing. Matter, in the form of hydrogen, is being converted into energy in sun and stars and all those billions and billions and bazillions of stars, and has been doing it for a long, long time. So if the universe was infinitely old, how much hydrogen would be left? It'd be all gone, wouldn't it? You put gas in your car, and you drive and drive and drive and drive, what eventually happens? If you don't stop and put more gas in it, you can't put more gas in the universe, okay? Eventually, you run out, okay? The energy would be gone if it had been doing this forever, okay? Second law, you can't even break even. Basically, the idea is the universe is constantly losing available energy, usable energy. And it's impossible to replenish the lost usable energy. So it's basically depleting. Everything's going from order to disorder, kind of like your kid's bedroom, right? Things don't naturally go into order. They naturally go into disorder. So if the universe was infinitely old, there would be no usable energy left. It can't be infinitely old because there's still usable energy. Lights are on, projectors working, sun's still burning. We still have energy. So we know with great confidence that there was a beginning. It hasn't always been going like this. So, yeah, if the universe was infinitely old, there'd be no more hydrogen, there'd be no more energy, but we have hydrogen and energy, and therefore there was a beginning. Okay? So if it had a beginning, what caused it to begin? Whoops. We're going to be there in a minute. This thing's supposed to be good to 100 feet. All right. My batteries must be weak. So basically the first cause, what created, it's kind of like this timeline, right? When God created this, he wasn't in it. It was created, everything in this creation was created from outside this creation, wasn't it? The cause is outside of this creation. You can't find it here. You can't measure it here. You can't experiment with it here. It's not here. It's outside. Okay? The first cause has to be something outside the creation. Something not in space, not in time. Something not confined to the physical laws of this creation. And, of course, for us, that's God, right? God is the explanation of that. The fact of a beginning is a big problem for Hinduism. I don't know how many of you have any familiarity with Hinduism. Basically, there's this unending cycle of creation, basically your reincarnation. Okay, what are you going to come back as? You don't eat meat because you might be eating your grandmother kind of thing, right? And they take that very seriously. There's a lot of Hindus in Gwinnett County, right? There's a huge temple not far from here. And their religion doesn't even make an attempt to explain creation. It's all about the steady state. And the fact that we can basically scientifically prove there was a beginning creates a real problem for Hinduism. It's also a big problem for atheists because it implies a first cause. And if you admit a first cause, you're essentially admitting a creator. Something created this. Something caused this to be. Something outside of creation caused it to be. So if somebody believes that something caused it to be, then they can't really call themselves an atheist. They're something else. An atheist really has no explanation for the beginning. And so basically science is eliminating atheism as a rational position because there's a beginning. Of course, there still are atheists, and they wax eloquent on their explanations, but they're all really arguing against the vast majority of scientists now who say that, yes, there was a beginning. An atheist can only imagine there is no God. There's no way for an atheist to prove there's no God. Because given that there's a first cause, you know, what was that first cause? To know what it was, or to know that there wasn't one, you'd have to know information from outside of creation. You know, you'd have to know something about that other world where God was when he made this. Okay? And so essentially, you've got to be omniscient. You've got to know things that are unknowable here. So you have to be God to be an atheist. You know, I'm just saying, you know. There's just really no way to logically and rationally sustain the idea that there's no creator if there's a beginning. Okay, let me give you an analogy. And this is a story of Flatland. It comes from an 1884 philosopher's story called Flatland, A Romance of Many Dimensions. And basically, I'm going to use it to illustrate our limited perspective relative to God's perspective. Okay? Okay. Here's the man in Flatland. He lives on a sheet of paper. Think of him as he's a two-dimensional thing. He can move up, down, left, right. Yeah, only in two dimensions. Only in the paper. He can't get out of the paper. He can't see anything outside the paper. He knows nothing except for what's in the paper, that sheet of paper. Okay? Now, one day, a miracle happens in Flatland. Imagine a sphere above the sheet of paper, and it passes through that plane where the paper is. You know, the man's there, he has no idea what a sphere is. He doesn't know what's happening, but suddenly he sees a dot where the sphere first touches the paper, right? It touches it at one point. As it continues passing through that plane, suddenly there's a circle. The circle gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And the man's sitting here terrified. There's this thing that he's never seen before that's taking over his room, you know. And then suddenly it starts to get smaller and smaller and smaller. It becomes a point, and it disappears. How does the man in Flatland explain that? It was a miracle, right? It's like it's unexplainable in his world. Okay? So, you know, basically, we just described that scenario. Okay, I think I need new batteries. The man in Flatland cannot explain what happened. Something came from nothing and then disappeared. Okay. It violated all the known laws in his world, right? That's never happened before. He can't make that happen. He has no way to visualize a sphere. He has no idea of anything outside his flat world. But to a three-dimensional being, it's easy to understand, isn't it? I mean, you can see how a three-dimensional sphere could pass through that plane. Okay, if you were a three-dimensional being and you had the ability to pass that through. Okay, so like the man in Flatland, science cannot explain creation. Okay, there's no way to observe what exists outside of our universe. Okay, we don't know what God can do and what he can't do. God can introduce things into our world that we have no way of explaining, and he can take them back out again. Okay. There's no way that science can explain what God can do. Because we have no way to observe. See, science is the scientific method is you make observations, you measure, you repeat the experiment, right? You can't observe what God is doing. You can't see that world. You can't describe or measure what he's doing. You can't repeat it. You certainly can't repeat creation, can you? Okay, so for us to be able to say this is what God did, or this is what he could do, or this is what he couldn't do, is really, you know, borders on insanity. It's arrogant. It's misguided. Because God is in a different realm than us. some being is in a different realm than us that caused the beginning, that we can look at our world and say, there was a beginning. Okay, so here's a quote from a famous cosmologist at MIT. The instant of creation remains unexplained. It's like they can calculate back so far, and then they come to the brick wall. They can't go any farther because what happened outside of that was in a realm they cannot observe. Okay. Stephen Hawking, theoretical physicist, the actual point of creation lies outside the scope of presently known laws of physics. Scientists, you know, you might get back nanoseconds after or picoseconds or whatever very small quantities of time they can get to, but you're not going to get beyond that because it's outside the scope. You can't see it, you can't measure it, you can't observe it. And it, you know, all you can do, the only way to know anything about the origin of the universe is if somebody outside the universe gives you information about that. Right? How else are you going to know? How else are you going to know what God did or what that other being, that other world, what happened in that other world to cause us unless somebody in that world tells us, right? Okay. That would be the Bible, right? That's what God's done. He's told us. So in summary, the universe had a beginning. That's acknowledged by pretty much, you know, all respected scientists these days. Therefore, something had to cause it to begin, which tells us there was some creator. And the Bible's told us that for thousands of years.